Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I have a very, very successful entrepreneur from Reykjavik, Iceland, Mr. Mike Klein. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mike is the founder and principal of an organization called Changing the Terms. He's a communication consultant based in Iceland. He's an MBA from the London Business School, and he's an author. He's an author of a book titled From Lincoln to LinkedIn, The 55-Minute Guide to Social Communication. So, Mike, let's start talking about changing the terms. Tell me about the kind of work you do.
Well, the kind of work that I do is focused mainly on strategic communication consulting. I mostly work inside of organizations, dealing with internal communications, change communication issues. Sometimes I also work with public bodies on some of their political challenges, because really the dynamics are quite similar. Once you take the personalities out of it, you can look at, you know, where's the power, where's the incentive, where's the interest, what's driving coalitions, and how do you create a coalition that's capable of getting whatever it is you're trying to do over the line into success. And so those are fairly universal communication roles, but I really like the internal dynamic because a lot of that is behind the scenes and below the surface. You know, it's not like an election campaign where you've got advertising and you've got people screaming saying these guys are good, those guys are bad. It's a lot more subtle, but at the same time, it's no less dynamic.
Interesting. And when you say that you're a communication consultant, what is the meaning of communication consultant or communication leadership?
Well, communication consulting and communication leadership are two related but different concepts. Communication consulting is that you work with people in organizations who need to engage either large numbers of people or specific numbers of the right people, specific constituencies, stakeholders, what have you. And in terms of finding messages and strategies and approaches that will engage those people to support or at least not oppose what you're trying to do. Communication leadership is actually a term that I've kind of taken on as my own. And it's really about, you know, the distinction around the communication, the leadership role that communication professionals can play in their organizations and communities. You know, you look at the term leadership communication on Google, or you walk into a library, and there will be thousands of volumes, tens of thousands of citations about how to help leaders communicate more effectively. But there's no book right now on how can a communication professional actually take on the mantle of leadership in their organization or community and help initiate things so that the outcomes their community and their organization seek become reality. And so that's the basis for an initiative that I started called We Lead Comms, which is recognizing people who are taking the initiative in the communication field to make a difference for the profession and for their organizations and societies.
Fascinating. You know, when I was much, much younger, I remember someone, my father telling me the difference between speaking and communication. And he said that communication really is when the other person is understanding what you're trying to say. As a communications guru, Mike, tell me, what is a good communication and what is a bad communication?
Well, I'm not sure I would call myself a guru. I think it's a really esteemed status, and I always appreciate it when people call me that. I'm not sure I'm there yet. And I'm not sure that the dichotomy between good communication and bad communication really captures the whole issue. I mean, I think it's more of a function of appropriate communication and inappropriate communication. That's kind of the baseline. You know, either the communication is sufficiently respectful, clear, specific, factual to offer the audience a choice of whether to accept it or not, and B, a pathway to action if they do accept the communication, even if the action is to just sit by and allow things to run their course.
Mm-hmm.
Inappropriate is a lot, is a lot more prevalent than it needs to be. And I think the key thing is that tone is the thing that's the easiest to get wrong.
Okay.
Followed by accuracy. But tone is where a lot of organizations mess up.
Mm.
Because they're telling people they're not respecting their level of agency or choice.
Mm.
They're not, recognizing the extent to which they actually have a say in what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so bad communication is usually a function of bad tone.
Mm. Okay. And based on all the experience that you have of having worked with so many individuals and companies, what are some of the challenges organizations and individuals face when it comes to communication, both external and internal?
Well, there's a lot of challenges, but I think there's one that's really overarching, which is that as a profession, we have to compete on a continuous basis and report to people who think they can do our job as well as we can.
Mm-hmm.
They think everybody's a communicator. Everybody knows how to communicate. Anybody who's got a website and a laptop is as qualified to do this as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that pressurizes us in a lot of ways. Pressurizes us around messaging, around tactics, really pressurizes us around budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge around getting the level of access and interaction, particularly to senior leaders, that we need in order to operate effectively. I think that's the biggest challenge we face.
Mm-hmm. And for our viewers and listeners, would you be able to share a few common errors that people make for them to understand it without, of course, giving any names?
Oh, sure. Well, I think the big error is this belief that important internal communication has to be top down, one way, and one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
And that everybody has to receive every message because it's important to the sender.
Mm.
And the reality is that in a lot of organizations, there's actually a relatively small number of people that need to actually act on the vast majority of information and requests that come through the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And where internal communication tends to break down is that either the system or the communications professional doesn't have the permission to prioritize, or as we're starting to see in a lot of remote companies and a lot of remote startups, you've got Slack and you've got Teams and you've got a weekly town hall and there's no filter that's placed on the information. So basically people are drowning in all this noise because all these stakeholders think their message is the most important thing in the organization.
Mm-hmm. And it is often said that within organizations that good communication should be released on a Monday morning. When it's communication, good is the wrong word. When the communication is about good news, it should be on a Monday morning. And when it's a communication about not so good news, it should be on a Friday evening. What is your perspective on this?
If you're in investor relations, that's not a bad strategy.
Okay.
If you're in internal communications, it's problematic on a number of levels because the problem with bad news is that everybody needs to know it. And if you're burying it, if you're bearing particularly the official explanation on a Friday afternoon, and you're in kind of a company heavy town, for instance, you're going to, the unofficial interpretation of that information is going to be much more powerful and much more rapid than the official interpretation.
Mm.
And the key reason for having internal communication in the first place is in the absence of an official story, unofficial stories proliferate. So that's part of it. The other part of it is it's not the timing as much as the source in a lot of ways. I've done a lot of communication merger and acquisition situations. And usually in those situations there was clearly an acquiring party and an acquired party, so there was a conqueror and the conqueree, if you will.
Sure.
And what we realized very quickly was that good news had to come from the acquired party. No, good news had to come from the acquiring party. So that they the acquired company can say, okay, there will be some improvements, there will also be some things that we can get excited about. Yeah. And the bad news needed to come from the acquired company so that the managers can say, you know, we really tried our best to do this and we really understand why it has to go the other way. And this was my whole comm strategy for a big airline merger 20 years ago. And it's one of the reasons why it was successful.
Okay. And how does one measure the effectiveness of an internal communication? Or is there a parameter like this at all?
Oh, absolutely. There's measures. I mean, the key thing is that the internal communications person needs to drive the measure.
Okay.
So, you know, you need to figure out, okay, what are the objectives of this communication, this phase that we're going through? You need to look at, okay, what do we want people to know? What do we want people to do? What do we not want people to think, say, feel? And then we can come up with tangible measures. So, for example, if we want people to do things, we can measure how many of these things are being done. Great example from a hospital in Denmark. They wanted their medical staff to use more medical wipes, more alcohol wipes to sanitize. And so on day one, they distribute all these alcohol wipes. Day two, they issue an internal communication piece around the value and why they're distributing these. And then they can measure the uptake in the use of these alcohol wipes before and after the communication was delivered.
Okay.
So A, not only are you measuring the behavior, the use of the alcohol wipes, but you're actually measuring the effectiveness of the internal communication because you can see the bump in the usage as a result of that communication activity. So, I mean, you have to be somewhat clever, but you can measure changes in behavior. You can measure changes in attitudes. You can measure changes in sentiment. But you've got to ask the right questions. You don't just simply ask sentiment questions when you're trying to gauge behavior.
Well said.
And this is, and this is the whole fallacy behind a lot of employee engagement surveys, is that they're trying to estimate and use sentiment as a proxy for action, as a proxy for understanding, and as a proxy for, you know, people saying the right things to each other. And it just doesn't work.
Very interesting. So when I was reading about you and preparing for this interview, there was an interesting comment that I read that you're focusing now on identifying, connecting, and promoting your fellow communication leaders. Tell me why you're doing this, or is it just to create a network?
Well, there's a number of different things that are layered into it. The idea of communication leadership is an idea that right now really needs a lot of traction. And so what better way to support this getting traction by giving it some traction? So by identifying people who exemplify these behaviors and sharing their example to the rest of the communications world. And I'm getting, you know, I've gotten about 160,000 impressions since I started doing this about 9 months ago.
Wow.
So there is definitely some traction around it. The second thing is that, you know, this is where I'm coming from, and I want to build a community of people who are like-minded about this one thing, about our ability to initiate and drive change and drive, you know, agreement on things in our communities and societies. A third piece is that I wanted to challenge some of the views, particularly in some of the kind of the old school networks, the old school associations, about what constitutes leadership in the field. You know, is it just simply supporting an individual association, or is it exemplifying what it is that effective 21st century practice is all about? And then the last bit is I wanted to give these people visibility of each other. So that they can use this to build their own networks and to build their own connections. And for me, for example, there's like two fashion communicators who've been recognized by Weekly Comps. One's in Ghana and one's in Texas. These people would have never connected. So one of the things that I do is I offer the ability for these people to connect, which doesn't exist through any other platform.
Very interesting. My next question to you, Mike, is how does culture impact communication?
Culture impacts communication in numerous and innumerable sorts of ways. You've got the culture of the profession. You've got the culture of the organization. You've got national culture. You've also got cultural norms around gender, age, religion, political standpoints, in terms of how loud to be, how soft to be, how deferential to be. I mean, the biggest cultural problem that I see communications professionals having, particularly internal communicators, is that our culture is way too deferential. I was interviewing a bunch of C-suite folks for some research I did a few years ago. And one of the key themes that came out was that these C-suite folks often get irritated with being asked for permission to do things that they've already thought they've deputized you to do. You know, the time has come for us to act, to seek forgiveness and not permission. And that's definitely professional culture. But then there's also national culture. I mean, you know, you have different relationships to hierarchy.
Correct.
In places like, you know, in different countries all over the world. And it's not even a function of regional geography. I mean, you know, in India, there's some issues around hierarchy. In Germany, in France, in Holland, in Scandinavia, and in different parts of the U.S. You know, sometimes people are on a first name basis with their leaders. Sometimes they're on a first name basis with their leaders, and they know not to approach their leaders in certain contexts.
Amazing.
And there's a lot of unstated cultural stuff, which is going to get really interesting the more and more remote we get.
Absolutely. One more question relating to communication and changing the terms before I move to your book. Mike, how does social media impact communication? I've often seen, even before anything official comes out, social media is already buzzing with what is going to happen. How does an internal communication expert or a leader manage social media?
You don't manage social media. The best you can do is avoid being managed by it.
Okay.
In an organization, certainly from a cultural perspective, some employees and some people are more hesitant to communicate about what's going on inside their firewall on social media than other folks are. But if you're a high visibility organization, either with a high visibility consumer product or a high visibility of population within a specific community or country or certain, you know, identifiable group, what you're doing and what people think you're going to do is going to be the topic of public conversation. And often the organization itself can't comment directly on these developments, but certainly you can monitor them. You can figure out who's doing the talking. You can engage some of the individuals. You can give them some off the record context where it's like, you know, I know that you just published, I'm not asking you to take it down, but the reason why we're doing this is the exact opposite of what you're pushing. You need to know this. I mean, there's a combination of defense and proactivity that you need to develop based on what it is that you're trying to do or trying to defend yourself against.
Very interesting. So, Mike, I'm now going to move to your book. We have time for a few questions relating to your book. You were an author of a book titled From Lincoln to LinkedIn, The 55-Minute Guide to Social Communication. Tell me about your book and the hypothesis.
Sure. I mean, I wrote the book about 10 plus years ago. And I'm pretty proud to say that it's still relevant, which given the changes that have taken place in the world of social communication, you know, in terms of the platform, in terms of the approaches, in terms of how people use it, I find rather astounding. But, you know, I share it with people. I can give it away now. I now own the copyright, so I can give it away to anybody who wants it. But by and large, people find it still interesting and still relevant, which amazes me, given, you know, really given the speed with which I wrote it and the time when I wrote it. But the premise of the book is based on some rather timeless ideas about how people motivate politically that came from Abraham Lincoln, the former U.S. president, but came from him 20 years before he became president, when he was a political activist and campaign manager in, you know, in a rural part of the state of Illinois, you know, probably about 5 hours from Chicago, really in the middle of nowhere. So he's having these great ideas and he's sitting in the middle of nowhere. And this idea was, he had a bunch of laws for running successful political campaigns. First was make a perfect list of the voters. Second was determine with certainty whom the voters would support. Third is, for those who are undecided, send someone whom they trust to persuade them, and then turn out the good Whigs, the good voters of his party, on election day. If you apply these to a corporate or to a social context, what you find is that these are the fundamental laws of actually changing anything and making anything happen, either commercially or politically. And Lincoln, you know, basically followed all these laws and he ultimately got elected president. And what happened with me was that I worked in political consulting for about 10 years before going into business. And I was taught these rules. And I was thinking, what is that gap to bridge between politics and business and how things happen? And then I realized it was Lincoln rules. And so what I did was I wrote about how the Lincoln rules apply to what's going on in businesses and communities and how they show up in terms of culture and tribalism, how they show up in terms of credibility. You know, the biggest cause of any business communication fail is to have the wrong message coming from the wrong source. So corporations like to trust their messages to the people the corporation trusts rather than the people who the recipients trust. So for example, if there's bad news about what's happening in a factory, unemployment, you know, reduced conditions, what have you, a company would much rather default to the CFO. But the employees would probably much rather hear that same message from a union official. But this, I mean, this is really the mother of a lot of corporate communication scripts, is source credibility.
Amazing. Mike, on that note, thank you so much. It's been such a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for taking me through your journey of communication, talking to me about all the amazing opportunities that exist for so many people and how to be able to communicate better. And thank you for talking to me about your book. Good luck.
It's been my pleasure. And if you want a copy of my book, just send a tweet to Changing Terms on Twitter, or you can find me on LinkedIn. Just type in mkline818 and you'll find me on LinkedIn.
Thank you, Mike.
Excellent.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.